Okay, good afternoon. So Cabinet today discusses the water situation in Havelock North. As you know, the government is launching an independent inquiry to ensure we have a clear understanding of what happened and how it can be prevented from happening again. It's important that all New Zealanders have confidence in the quality of drinking water. Today we have released the draft terms of reference for the inquiry. The inquiry will look at how the Havelock North water supply became contaminated, how this was subsequently addressed, and how local and central government agencies responded. We'll also look at what lessons and improvements can be made in the management of water supply in Havelock North and more broadly across New Zealand. The draft terms of reference will be finalised once we have appointed someone to head the inquiry, which we hope to be in a position to do so very shortly. It's important we take time to get the right person to head this inquiry. Cabinet also approved a recommendation allowing IRD to waive interest on late tax payments for local businesses affected by the outbreak. We appreciate that this has been a very difficult time for the people of Havelock North, but while we are working our way through it, it's important that people continue to follow the advice of health professionals. Cabinet also discussed the latest household labour force survey. The economy remains at the forefront of the government's busy work programme. We need a strong economy to support the new jobs and higher incomes our country needs, and National's economic plan is delivering on this. Interest rates are low and businesses are investing. Exports are up. We exported $2.3 billion more than last year than the year before and $7 billion more than 3 years ago. And consumer confidence remains solid. Retail spending is up 2.3% in the June quarter, the largest quarterly rise since 2006. But importantly, the economy is delivering real results for New Zealanders and their families. The latest household labour force survey showed unemployment down to 5.1%. Now that unemployment rate is moving up or down 1%, 0.1% any single quarter doesn't really matter, but what is important is that we have a clear trend for more jobs, higher wages and falling unemployment. Over 250,000 extra jobs have been created in the last 3 years. Our employment rate, the proportion of all people 16 or older in work, is now the second highest in the OECD. And we're seeing incomes continue to rise. The average annual wage is now up 25% compared to when we came into office at over 58,000. That's more than double the rate of inflation. So it's simply wrong to suggest that wages are not increasing. Low inflation means that nominal wage increases are modest, but almost all of it goes into the family's back pocket rather than being eaten up by cost of living increases. Compare that to when we took office, wages had increased by 5.1% the previous year, but that was completely offset by rampant inflation of 5.1%. The government will continue working hard to ensure that the benefits of a growing economy are passed on to New Zealanders and their families. Turning to the Olympics now, I'd like to congratulate all of our athletes on their incredible performances and record medal haul in Rio. Seeing New Zealanders not only excel but also carry themselves with such dignity and poise on the world stage reflects incredibly well on New Zealand and is an inspiration to Kiwis young and old. They did their country and themselves proud, showing there is no limit to what Kiwis can achieve when they set their goals and work hard to achieve them. Parliament this week will progress a number of committee stages, including the Child Sex Offenders Registers Bill and the Evidence Amendment Bill. On Wednesday morning, the House will sit under extended hours to progress broadly supported legislation, and Wednesday is also a Members' Day. In terms of my own activities, I'm in Wellington tomorrow and on Wednesday. On Wednesday, the government is hosting a state farewell for Sir Jerry Mataparai, who completes his term as Governor-General next week. I'd like to thank Sir Jerry for his dedication and service in his role as Governor-General. Sir Jerry has worked tirelessly in the community. He has helped celebrate success at every level in New Zealand and represent us well overseas. I wish Sir Jerry and Lady Janine all the very best for the future. As you know, Dame Patsy Reddy will take over the role on September the 28th. In regards to the rest of the week, I'm at Alexandra on Thursday and Whanganui on Friday.
Just on the Havelock North Inquiry, will it look at the wider issue of intensive dealing practices as well? A lot of people are saying this is the chance to look at some of those issues.
Well, there's some fairly broad terms if you look at the terms of reference that have been released. So there's some stuff at the end, I think, that gives them those sort of at the moment, the draft recommendations 5, 6, 7, and 8 gives them some broad scope. But I think, you know, it's important actually that it gets out and does its work and does its very best to identify actually what caused the problem, not, you know, some particular people who might be pushing a particular perspective they have or a particular narrow that they might have pushed for a long period of time. It's actually important that we get to the facts of what caused the problem.
What exactly did you say the government's been missing in action up there?
Well, it's just simply not true, and it's not what we get on the ground. I mean, the government, it's been an issue that was identified rightfully so by local government because they have responsibility for the delivery of water. As soon as the district, health ministry was advised, the Department of Health, then they dispatched both the advice, they were in very close contact, they made sure that all the resources were there, and they followed all of their appropriate steps from what I can see. But as you can see, one of the terms of reference in the inquiry is to ensure that the government, you know, followed all of the steps that it needed to follow professionally and appropriately. But there's no evidence to support they've done anything in their job thoroughly professionally.
How long do you expect the inquiry to take?
We don't know exactly. I mean, obviously, that depends partly on who heads the inquiry, and so, you know, what they're currently doing and how quickly they might be able to be released from their current workload. But it's in the order of, you know, it's quite a few months of work will be reasonably thorough inquiry.
Don't you think then, I mean, residents up there are already on edge in wanting answers. You know, it could be months before they get any answers?
Well, we'll obviously give them the answers as quickly as we can, and the council there is working as aggressively as it can. Forget about the, you know, the government's inquiry to find out, you know, what caused the contamination. So that's not something that's waiting for an inquiry to report back on, but that's part of the work that they're already doing, so I don't think people should be worried about that.
How concerned are you and the Cabinet that this could be replicated in other areas of New Zealand, i.e. you know, an issue like this that people don't know what is causing it?
Look, I think you wouldn't want to sort of join dots and say because it's happened in one place it can necessarily happen somewhere else. Yeah, at this point we don't know what's caused the contamination. I could be proved to be wrong, so too close to accounting this, but I think that the Hastings, Havelock North area and Christchurch are two places that don't chlorinate their water. I think most of the rest of the country does, from memory. And so if they did have an outbreak, they wouldn't necessarily get all of the issues that they've had here, but it just depends.
If it turns out to be something related to intensification or farming, would you see room for a secondary inquiry to follow that?
Well, the Cabinet did consider whether there should be two parts to the inquiry, as we did when we had the whey protein. We had two parts to the inquiry. In the first instance, we decided not to do that today because we believe that the terms of reference we were setting were pretty broad and would allow the panel to do their work and come up with some conclusions. But yeah, ultimately, if it makes some recommendations to the government about changes that are required, then the government will obviously listen to that. I mean, the only point I'd make is just that, yeah, while there has been some intensification in farming in New Zealand, without doubt in recent time, that's been happening for a long period of time. We haven't seen these issues somewhere else. Some of the early advice we had, but look, again, has to wait and be seen, is that apparently isn't a huge amount of intensification around these particular bores, and that is one of the points I think that MPI or somebody was making on the radio over the weekend. But again, all of this will come out in the full inquiry.
Have you thought any more about any further compensation for businesses, or would you look at even some money to work with the council who are working on the package?
Yeah, so in the first instance, our preference is to focus on the work that we've been doing around tax, because we think that's the most practical thing that we can do. But we'll just continue to see how this plays out and continue with our discussions with the council.
Would you look at giving them some money to go?
It's not something we've considered today. I'm not 100% ruling it out, but at the moment our focus has been on the tax side.
Since I asked you last week, is there anything that's come out in the last 7 days that's made you think again about whether the council was slow either in responding or in informing people?
No, I haven't seen anything yet that would suggest that. You know, we can trace ourselves back through the steps at an extremely high level, as I understand it. They tested on the Tuesday, I think, as we discussed, there was no sign of a problem. They tested on the Thursday, the results of which they got on the Friday. They indicated there could be some issue, but they didn't have the final results of those till the Saturday. They took the step of chlorinating straight away, as I understood it. Now, in the end, there are many other moving parts that, take place, aren't there, about notifications and all of those issues. And that's the top of the inquiry.
But aren't you, isn't that effectively absolving the local government of any blame before the inquiry even starts?
No. Look, it's an independent inquiry, and the expectation is that the inquirers will have a very good look at the actions of, you know, of local government. They should rightfully have a look at central government, although I'm pretty confident about what we've done, but they should nevertheless do that, and look at all the other issues that have been identified in the terms of reference, or that will be fleshed out. But I'm just saying, nothing's come to me that says, here's a smoking gun that you should be concerned about. I don't have any advice or evidence of that, but let's see what the inquiry is like.
Would you consider going up there yourself to see people, and what's your message to them who are, they are really angry and upset and stressed by this, and angry at both the central government and local government?
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously, firstly, it's very distressing for people, and it's been quite a difficult time for the local community. The feedback that I've had is that people have been grateful for what the government has been doing in terms of both the resources we've dispatched and the visits by both Sam Lotoinga, by the local MP, you know, Craig Voss, and by Jonathan Coleman on Friday. I've been meeting, as you know, with the Director General of Health and other officials, and there have been a series of meetings last week. So, look, in the end, you know, we are very focused on what's been taking place there, and I'm making sure that they've got the resources and the help that they need. But, you know, nothing can change the fact that, you know, inevitably, in the end, actually, this contamination's occurred. Now we need to work out how, why, and what's happening in the future.
Why don't we visit for yourself and see for yourself?
The advice we've had in terms of the number of contaminations, or, you know, the health impacts, so that they're very much plateaued and starting to come off dramatically. So, I mean, ultimately, I think the people of Havelock North would much rather that I establish a broad inquiry that can look at the issues and make sure everyone's held to it in account. I mean, me wandering around probably on myself isn't going to do much.
Prime Minister, just on the criminal charges and possible, you know, civil action. Who would be charged, and, you know, what agency would take that action?
Yeah, so we don't know the cause of contamination, so therefore we don't know where any civil criminal charges could follow. But by definition, they don't happen that, you know, from an inquiry per se. They happen because the relevant agencies decide that there should be action taken. We saw that with the Royal Commission of Inquiry, for instance, in Christchurch. So in the end, the sort of bodies that could take prosecution, if there was one that was deemed to be relevant, obviously are potentially the council or the police. But, you know, we're quite a long way from that. I'm just simply saying that, you know, everything's on the table. It's a proper inquiry, and see if any information comes
in. I mean, is there any chance here that it could be, you know, like, deliberate kind of.
Well, you saw Winston Peters trying to make those claims last week, but I don't think he's got any evidence to support that. I've certainly never seen any evidence to support that.
Why
has
the civil and criminal liability been ruled out of the inquiry?
Because it's not a matter of being ruled out. It's not in the inquiry, because the inquiry doesn't of itself decide whether civil or criminal proceedings should be taking place, because if they did, we'd be in a police state, or we'd be the government saying that. Those actions are taken by, rightly so, by independent people of either the regulatory body or the council or the police, but they make those decisions, not the government.
Would you expect them to recommend any actions along those lines?
Again, I don't think they do make a recommendation. I think what happens is, you know, they go through a proper inquiry, the information is brought to light, and then the bodies themselves are charged with the responsibility always of looking to see whether there is the need for someone to be either prosecuted or not. And that's the nature of the police's work every single day. The government, you know, through legislation, whatever, sets up some you know, a situation where that's been determined by the appropriate body. So, look, I don't think you wouldn't have it in terms of reference. It's not what we do, but I'm just saying it doesn't get ruled out.
Can I put it around the other way? Would you expect those agencies like the police to wait for this inquiry to complete its work before making any calls on prosecutions or charges?
Any matters about whether prosecution can take place is solely a matter for those agencies. They'll determine whether they believe there's either information to support it and evidence to support it.
You said that the Cabinet had decided against a two-part inquiry. Yep. What would have been in the second part?
Well, we incorporate, it would have been some of the things we're incorporating in the first part. And so, you know, the broader sort of reference points, if you like, we decided on balance were better included in one proper inquiry. But when we did WPC, whey protein, whatever it was, I mean, essentially we had the first part, which was, you know, how did it happen, and then we, you know, then what happened, and then we did some rural work on how did it happen. I think it's sort of better to do it in one go, but let's see.
So did you decide not to include a broader look at intensification and how that's affecting water quality?
Well, I think quite a different matter. At least something comes out of the inquiry, to Audrey's point, that supports the view that more work needs to be done. I mean, let's just, you know, get ahead of ourselves. There are going to be plenty of people who for a long time got their own barrow to push and will want to make the case of join the dots, but I don't think that's necessarily something you can join.
So that was not something Kevin looked at today?
No.
Is the water testing being increased?
Look, it's not the first time there's been a contamination of some sort in New Zealand, but it's of significant scale that we simply wouldn't want to have seen it or see it repeated. But there are from time to time notifications about concerns about water supply. I think most people would accept that while we need to understand what took place, these things can happen. And we just need to understand why it's happened and what can be done to prevent it. So I don't think there's likely to be any lasting international damage caused by it.
Can I ask, well, you indicated this morning that you spoke to the Director General on the Tuesday morning. Can I ask specifically when you were contacted first, is it by Sam Lottinger or anyone else?
Oh, I'd have to check my office and give the exact details.
So Prime Minister, on that intensification issue, is Cabinet have any advice as to whether that's possible or not, because there isn't exactly a whole lot of intensive dairy in that particular area.
No, there hasn't been any advice that's led to this issue.
Yeah, has there been any advice that it's unlikely or anything like that?
What information we know at this point, or certainly I know, is what I think what you know is what's in the public domain. I'm simply saying that, you know, there was some expert on the radio over the weekend saying, you know, intensification around the area where the borers hasn't been a significant factor.
You mentioned the House of Labour Force figures.
Yeah.
Are you concerned that high levels of temporary migration might be suppressing wages? Because the Reserve Bank and Treasury have said that they might be concerned about that.
Yeah, I think if you go and have a look at all of their full comments, though, I mean, you know, they made it, I think the Reserve Bank certainly made a few comments about that issue, but then went on to say on balance the benefits of all of these things outstripped it. I mean, wage growth's been quite strong, real wage growth's been, you know, running at about 13%, so I don't think there's a great deal of evidence to support the migration that's holding down wages. What you've got in New Zealand, in so much that you've still got, you know, some unemployment, obviously, by definition, and you've got a shortage of workers in other places, is a mismatch. I think you've got some people unemployed in Northland, and you've got some sort of strong job growth in other parts of the country, and it's putting the two together. That's been a big issue, but for the most part, I mean, the economy looks to us that it's generating quite a lot of jobs, 250,000. You've got the unemployment rate falling, the employment rate rising, and you've got more and more people moving into apprenticeships and the like. So
do you expect that real wage inflation to continue? Because Treasury is saying that's not the case, that once inflation gets back to where it should be.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what future wage rounds are and what expectations are. I mean, in certain areas, there's no question there'll be more rapid wage growth. If you take the construction sector, I'll be very surprised if a lot of tradespeople aren't charging more today than they were, you know, 12 or 18 months ago. Their demand for their services is higher, and I suspect that's flowing through.
That's not what the wage figures from the other various things are saying about construction wages. They're actually only up 2% from a year ago.
Yeah. Try and tell that someone who's trying to hire someone in Auckland at the moment to do some renovations.
And are you still on the view that Treasury's forecast of migration, you know, pumping back down to 12,000 net in a year or two is wrong?
Feels a bit low to me. When you saw the numbers back off a bit this week, I mean, very much at the margins. I think our expectations are that the net migration numbers will ease down a bit. The 12,000 is reasonably dramatic from 69,000. Now, maybe over time it can. It will depend a lot on a number of factors, not the least of them being the strength of Australian labour markets. Because what you really have, if you do you accept that we're not losing 35,000 people a year largely to Australia? That's been one of the big factors helping, you know, essentially net migration to be strong. Now, as soon as the Australian labour markets come back, the mining sector comes back, you'll see some people flying across the Tasman.
What do you have to recognise the increase in population we've had over the last 12 months in particular with increased spending at the next budget?
Most probably, I mean, we did in the last budget, you remember we originally intended to have a new budget spend of about $1 billion and ended up spending about 1.5, and at least a chunk of that was population related. So there's no question it costs you a bit more. I mean, you generate a lot more economic activity and more taxes, but there's no question in certain areas it does cost you more, particularly see that information to a certain degree, maybe sometimes in other areas. So yeah, there could be a little bit more expenditure, but it swings around about. If your revenue is going up faster than your costs, it's generally a good thing.
There's a poll out today showing that 60% of voters would actually like house prices to fall either a bit or by a lot. What do you think the political calculations are with falling house prices?
Oh, look, I mean, in the end, I think I'd take all of those surveys with a degree of, grain of salt. If you don't own the house, then I'm sure you want the house prices to fall. If you do own the house, depends by what you mean by it, but most people would accept house prices have gone up, you know, a reasonable amount, both under us and the previous government, and you know, people will argue that, you know, that they, these things do trade, you know, go in cycles a little bit. I don't think myself there's any public appetite from homeowners to see a substantial reduction in house prices. It might be from those who don't own a house, obviously, but the sorts of numbers that Terry Turay has been talking about of a 50% reduction would have a very significant impact. Now, a very significant impact, as I've been trying to say in Parliament, on the least well-off New Zealanders who typically borrow the most. I can't see why they want that policy.
The poll showed 55% of homeowners, actual people who own homes, would actually like prices to fall.
Across the Tasman, Prime Minister, we've seen more details of Australia's plebiscite on marriage equality. Now, for same-sex marriage, New Zealand implemented this through a just law bill in the Parliament that you voted for. Do you think the plebiscite is a good idea?
Look, in the end, it's a matter for them. Every country deals with this issue in a different way. We had as a members' bill and with conscience vote, but Australia seems to have had a, you know, fairly common view that that's the way it should be handled, so it's a matter for them.
On the issue of conscience votes, why aren't your MPs being allowed a free vote on the Easter trading bill?
Well, I don't think it is a conscience vote. And that's because we're not asking them to decide whether you should be allowed to trade on the approved days over Easter trading. What we're saying is that local council should be allowed to make that decision. And we've seen in the past, you know, a number of attempts to basically update and modernise Easter trading laws, and they've always failed. And they've failed for a variety of reasons. And I think that where the current laws are set is mad. Because if you go down the road from where I live, if you want to turn left at the top of my street, you hit Newmarket and you can't trade over the Easter trading weekend on the days you're not allowed to, at least the Sunday or whatever it is, and you go right, and you are, because it's in Parnell. Parnell was deemed to be a tourism hub, and Newmarket wasn't. If you go and have a look at Wanaka, I think you'll find the local community absolutely understands what it wants, and it wants to be able to trade because it hosts Warburns over Wanaka. And you're never going to get a resolution to this through Parliament. Sorry, but the only way you're going to resolve it is for local communities to be masters of their own destiny. And that is not a conscience matter to decide whether local communities can decide their own future.
But the Tom McLean's bill in 2009 had a similar premise, allowing local folks to decide that, and was treated as a conscience
vote,
and
then
actually invented by the gangster.
Yeah, that was specifically for Easter trading. This is about the right of the community to decide that, and the councils to decide that.
But isn't that the way you've got around it? You've sort of put the MP's conscience two steps away from the actual decision, and therefore, and then compel them to vote for it.
No. What we've done is come up with the right solution for giving some momentum to this issue. Because, you know, every single Easter, we get the same story. Firstly, A, go and ask yourself whether the law is actually being enforced. Because in a lot of cases, it's not. You've got people who are deliberately trading, who turn up every year, and do get prosecuted from the courts, who just, you know, basically accept they've got to pay a fine because it's cheaper than you know, what they make. But actually, it's just I just think it's in a deadlock, and sometimes you've got to find a way through this.
Sounds like the marijuana law, isn't it?
Well, in the end, this is a different thing. This is about local communities deciding, and I don't think that's a conscience issue.
Prime Minister, just on the homelessness inquiry that was... Yep. What's your take on that? Do you think that the option could come up with anything meaningful there?
Quite. If they do, we'll more than happily listen to it. But we've had an inquiry. The Minister undertook that well over a year ago. It was the genesis for some of the spending that took place in the budget. We're conscious of the issue. There's $50 million more being spent in that area, and we're not ruling out doing more. I'm not convinced that an inquiry would give us any better information than we've currently got. We've certainly had the officials looking at the issue very intensively. But in the end, if they want to hold an inquiry, I don't run their calendar. They're free to do it. And if they come up with something interesting that's new, government will look at it, but I'm not that confident they will.
Is it the intention of the Health Ministry or the Ministry for Environment or EFO or whoever's in charge of testing the water in Hawke's Bay to put the results on the net for people to be able to follow it as it goes past on a day-to-day basis to know when it's higher or lower or gone, clean?
Can't answer that question, but someone in Hawke's Bay will probably be able to answer that.
Somebody make up a rider in the weekend and managed to get in the country with some cannabis leaf. Kevin Kelly's talking about doing something similar, who knows these. What do you make of that loophole? Is it something that you would shut down if a large chunk of the population started doing?
Well, it's part of the current law. If you have to meet the legal conditions under which you've got that cannabis, which is it has to be prescribed by a doctor, and you have to demonstrate that for medical reasons you need it, it's got to be less than 1 month's supply, but it's part of law. I don't think it's been widespread in terms of its use. The person I understand bringing in has been somewhat of an activist, but that's their call. I mean, we don't see it as something we're looking to close down at the moment. It is the law.
It is a loophole that's been found, though. It was only done recently, which is why no one's really been doing it. So is that a way of broadening access without actually having to sort of say we are broadening access?
No, I mean, if the government wanted to broaden access, we'd do that. Yeah, well, we're in agreement on that one. Neither of us are going to vote Labour in the future.
What about the Māori Party and the
Māori Party? I'm not so hot on that idea.
Do you think that the Māori
Party
should remain
politically neutral? Not if
you
keep saying the first thing he said.
Hey, Prime Minister, just a quick just to follow up on some of your comments on the Paul Henry show this morning, that bugs had been found once or twice around you. Was that here in New Zealand that bugs were found?
I just can't go into the details for obvious reasons. I'm just saying it's not a new concept that people would put in bugging devices. I mean, in the case of the All Blacks in Australia, there's, I think you can put down a few of the comment pieces this morning. You wouldn't want to jump to conclusions about who put it there, how it got there, or why it's there. Who knows? In the hotel, it could have been for a variety of reasons. Maybe it was old, maybe it was deliberate, who knows?
But for instance, were you bugged by another country, or were you bugged by interests that perhaps want to... that we're in another country that might be
some, instances, I wouldn't know who's behind it, and I certainly wouldn't comment even if I didn't know. I'm just saying it's widespread, and I think people would be wise to consider those factors.
How many times would you say that you had been?
Don't know, and I don't know a fraction of them.
But you know of one or two instances, and sort of referred to the fact that the material, you can buy it on the, had a look today, you buy it on the internet.
Yeah.
Does that say it doesn't necessarily have to be, the KGB or something like that? It could just be someone wanting to record the
product. I don't know the motivations or the source or any of the details of Australia.
I'm talking about the ones on view.
I'm in a privileged position sometimes having ways of determining what they might be, but I'm just not going to go
into it. Does that worry you?
No, it's just that anyone would be sensible and aware of it.
If the All Blacks asked, would you allow your spy agencies to assess what recorded then? Would you allow the New Zealand spy agencies to cooperate with the All Blacks in terms of finding out?
Well, there's been no request from the Rugby Football Union for GCSB support. In principle, you know, they might have some technical expertise, but there may well be others that can provide that to them as well if they're interested. It's a police investigation, as I understand it now, so they'll have access to, you know, their own ways and means of determining this.
But could that happen, i.e. it's just like any other corporate organisation, you know, the rugby union is just like any other corporate organisation in New Zealand that can't ask the BCSB for support, surely?
Can they do it? I don't know. I'd have to go and check that. I mean, there are organisations all the time who make sure that their premises are swept for listening devices. It sounds like, you know, this is clearly, you know, it's not the first time rugby talk we've even done, so they've obviously taken precautions before. There'd be plenty of corporate organisations that would do that, and there's political parties and governments that do as well. Okay.